You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
I like the thought of you making the finals at this stage. Like when you made the finals, you were younger, so staying up till 9 o'clock was fine. But I like the thought of you now trying to stay up till 9:18.
I'll tell you
games.
What.
Even if you were coaching.
No, I mean, like, I have to make sure that I get a nap during the day. And I mean a late nap. Like I laid down for a nap at like 6 o'clock last night so that I would be able to stay up for the entire game. I mean, and game one, I didn't make it. I was tired and I ended up falling asleep. I went back and watched it the next morning. I mean, these games are late, man.
It's great. Napping.
Not that I don't nap every day anyway, but
of course,
but usually earlier in the day, I need a late nap on game days. The f- time does Lebatard's clock say it is?
It's unbelievable.
Last night, he says, oh, we're going to lock you in at 10:30. Like,
he's a terrible guest booker and friend.
I mean, 10:30.
Now, Stan, he's a terrible friend. He's a horrible guest booker.
Okay, we are. All right.
And is it 10:30 yet?
Let's get to this, Van Gundy. No, let's have this out right now on air. We had a players-only meeting. Now let's have a meeting right now where you've been complaining for 15 minutes that I have not got here. I did not realize that 15 minutes was too long for you. I value your time. I don't mean to seem unappreciative.
Well, clearly you don't value my time. I mean, like, that's obvious. Like, that's a great thing to say. Like, that's basically what the Republicans say about gun safety. Oh, we really care about all these school shootings and things, and you don't do anything. Clearly, you don't value my time.
Right. Empty words. You're right. And thoughts.
Exactly.
Exactly right. Dan, while you were holding a players-only meeting, Stan was telling me that he has to take a late afternoon nap just to make it up for the 9:18 tip. Like, I love the idea if Stan was coaching today and made it to the NBA Finals, he would be furious that these games, and I'm not certain he'd make it to the games, that these games start at 9:18.
I'll tell you what, they are late. I get it because, you know, I have a lot of friends from high school on the West Coast. Well, I don't have a lot of friends, period. But the friends that I do have on the West Coast from high school are, you know, Warriors fans. And, like, even the 6 o'clock start, like, you know, they're rushing home from work to be able to see it. So I get why the games are on when they're on. But, man, I'm an old man, and it is not easy staying up till 11:30, 11:45 to finish watching a game.
I don't want to do this show or that show where we complain at the height of the NBA Finals when the ratings are back and this is a good series. And Boston is close to a historic coronation here. Stan, what are you seeing in this series? If you want more coverage of this, Zach Harper and Mo and Tom and Amin do a great job here today covering the details and the funny from Amin on the stuff that happened at the game. But what are you noticing in this series, Stan?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just Boston's clearly the more talented team. I mean, they're bigger, they're more athletic, they've got as much shooting and offensive firepower. I mean, Golden State certainly can win this series, but they've got so little margin for error. I mean, They have to be able to create some turnovers. When they did last night, they took advantage of them, but they couldn't create enough turnovers like they did in game two. And then they have to shoot the ball extremely well because they're going to get out-rebounded. They've got no presence at the rim. They just don't have as good a roster as Boston has. I mean, to me, that's what's clear about it. And again, not saying they can't win. They can do what they did in game two, but you know, their intensity level in game two was incredible. They really got into Boston. Boston's major weakness to me is their lack of ball handling. I mean, you can turn them over. Victor Oladipo showed that as much as anybody in the Heat Celtics series. They struggle there. But to maintain that kind of pressure and intensity over the course of 48 minutes for a seven-game series is hard. They just don't have any margin for error, the Warriors.
It was interesting watching last night, Stan, that you get to a point where you're like, oh, wait a minute, if they're not going to get anything at all from the bench, if Draymond's just going to run around out there setting picks and passes, now you're just relying on Steph and Clay and Wiggins, and please, who's going to get us? Because Poole was great in game two. But if you don't get that from Poole or anyone else, I think that's a big leap that you just made, Stan, to say Boston is so much more clearly talented. But that is the game to make it off of. If you see Golden State stripped down to, well, your guys played okay, but you don't have enough for Boston in this game.
Well, I'm not saying they don't have enough. Like I said, they can win the series. I just think Boston's more talented. I mean, the first thing that stands out to me in the game is just watch the jump ball at the start of the game when they line up. Just size-wise, and I'm not saying size is everything, but just size-wise, it looks like, and I'm not saying this in terms of talent. I don't want Warriors fans all over me on this. But just size-wise, when they match up, you're going, it looks like the varsity against the JVs. I mean, Golden State is so small. They play most of the game, think about this, with Draymond Green at center, and the Celtics will have on the floor four guys taller than him. You know, they'll go Robert Williams, Horford, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown, all taller than Draymond Green. I mean, that's a lot to overcome, especially when take Steph Curry out of the picture, the shooting is no better for Golden State. Like, where's the advantage for Golden State? Golden State has to create turnovers, has to create pace, has to play at a high level of defensive intensity. They can win, but their margin for error is a lot smaller than Boston's is. And Boston's been doing this at least since January. They've been the best team in the NBA, and people haven't paid enough attention.
Stan, Robert Williams is so impressive. A healthy Robert Williams is so impressive. Like, who would you compare him historically to defensively in terms of defense? Because it reminds me of Dwight Howard a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that. Not as strong as Dwight, but it doesn't matter as much now because nobody ever posts anybody up. But in terms of his ability to defend pick and rolls, in terms of his ability to come and block shots, I was thinking, you know, on the defensive end, a little bit of a young Serge Ibaka, too, when he was blocking everything in Oklahoma City. I mean, to me, that's the matchup where the difference is made. And I'm a huge Kevon Looney fan. But I will just say, if you flipped Robert Williams and Kevon Looney right now, then the Warriors are the better team.
Wow.
I mean, just look at what happened when Boston drove the ball last night. There was no rim protection whatsoever from Golden State. They are so small. And Boston has not only Robert Williams, but has Robert Williams coming out of everywhere, blocking shots and even deterring people from taking shots at the rim. Look, Boston, to me, there's a lot of great things to talk about with them. But what they have done has been so interesting to me because the league has gone smaller. And Boston went against the grain and went bigger. Remember when Al Horford was in Philly, right? And they were trying to play him alongside Joel Embiid. And everybody's like, oh, you can't, it doesn't fit. You can't play two centers together. Well, Boston is. And then their wings are huge. And by the way, those two young guys are both two-way players. They're not giving up anything at the defensive end to get their offense. And then Smart is a much bigger, stronger point guard than most teams have. Like, this team has decided to play big. They've made great personnel moves. They have the perfect roster for today's game. It's just, look, everything else being equal, big always beats small.
Stan, I want to call out a bit of fraudulence in the last time that you were on with us, because I asked you, you had the same sort of observation on Miami and Boston. You said, man, Miami's so small. They're so small. And I said, but isn't the problem the same for Golden State? And you told me very quickly, no, it's not the same. And you sound like you're making Golden State even smaller than Miami. It sounds like you're making Golden State even less talented than Miami.
I don't know about less talented, but they are smaller, especially the way they play. Now, at the start of games, they're not necessarily smaller, but they're spending the vast majority of their minutes playing Draymond Green at center. Looney's on the bench. They haven't played him.
But that's Stan, that's their killer lineup from 2016. 7 years is a long time in the NBA, but that's their lineup of death, isn't it?
Yeah, it's getting them killed. I mean, here's the thing. Okay, so why do you, if you're an NBA team, why do you play small? And you play small to get more quickness and athleticism on the floor. Do you watch this series and think that the Warriors have a quickness advantage over the Boston Celtics? Because I don't. Is Draymond Green playing center at 6'8", more athletic than Robert Williams? Certainly not. Not even close. Are Klay Thompson and Andrew Wiggins more athletic than Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? Certainly not. Is Steph Curry have an athletic advantage over Marcus Smart? Absolutely not. I mean, so that advantage is out the window of playing small. And then you play small to get a skill advantage, but they don't have a skill advantage either over Boston. Boston, I mean, certainly Steph Curry has been great, but Boston shoots the ball as well and everything else. Now, I do think Golden State has a huge ball handling advantage. I talked about that a little bit earlier. But the small ball lineup that Golden State has to play to try to match Boston's skill is just so small compared to Boston, and they still don't get an advantage over the Celtics.
Stan, can you reprimand Stugatz? Because last night he said the Warriors were going to show us why champions are made of. We lost another bet here. Did we lose both ends of it?
Yeah, we lost both
ends. Okay, so you were 0-2. So if you had faded our parlay, you would have won again, because Stugatz picked Golden State is going to show you how they're champions. And what are you thinking of everything Stan is saying right now, Stugatz? Because it sounds like he's saying this series is over. He's not. He's saying Golden State can still win, but he's saying he sees zero advantages anywhere except for perhaps some lucky shooting.
Well, I saw plenty of advantages in game two for the Golden State Warriors. So, like, we know the Warriors can beat the Celtics. We know that they have talent in Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Boston did look pretty intimidating and imposing last night at home, which gives you pause for concern, but I mean, I've watched enough of these series, Dan. Golden State's a really good team. Like, these series, I think it's going to be a deep series. I think it will go 6 or 7 games. I'm not saying Golden State's going to win. And I thought Golden State would have done that thing that champions do last night. But they're not. They're a different champion. They're a champion who won from the three-point line. Steph Curry needs to weave some twos. That's the problem with Steph Curry.
Weave some twos.
No, he needs to be able to get in the paint, pull up, hit a little jumper.
Steph was not the problem in that game.
He was in the second half. I'm sorry.
But you know what? I agree with everything Stugatz just said. I really do. I'm not saying, I want to be clear, I'm not saying Golden State can't win this series. I'm saying they have a very small margin for error. They're going to have to force turnovers, play at a high pace, and play with great defensive intensity the entire game to put pressure on the Celtics and create turnovers. We saw in game two, they're capable of doing it. What I'm saying is to do all of that to overcome the Celtics' advantage in size and athleticism, to be at that intensity level for an entire seven-game series for 48 minutes is hard. They just have very little margin for error. Look, I mean, you see it so many times. Celtics will play great defense, and then Jason Tatum just realizes, like, oh, the guy guarding me is a foot shorter than I am. Maybe I'll just shoot over the top and score. I mean, they have an advantage, and it doesn't mean it can't be overcome. The Warriors are a great team. They just don't have great margin for error.
I do think you're absolving Steph Curry of that terrible stretch in which he lost a game with the turnovers.
Fair enough.
So bad.
Fair enough. We can blame it on him, but
can we get to the important stuff?
Yes, please.
I'm tired of this shit. Well, Stan, damn. Top five breads. I got my list. I got a few OLI, but I want you to go first.
Top five breads.
You're talking. I've never thought of this.
You're talking Stan's language right now, and I've got an immediate.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I've ever thought of this. I mean, like.
No. Look. Don't talk this out yet. Don't talk this out. Okay. You think it out. You save that golden content for when it is that we need to go to your food expertise. But we're going to go right now to Chris Cody's top five. I've got a number one that I've got just my number one bread of all time. And I don't know
You don't eat bread.
Well, I don't eat bread, unfortunately, anymore. But if I could have this bread.
You still have a top five bread.
No, I don't have a top five bread. I have a top one bread. Stugatz, what's your top one bread, Stugatz?
Money.
So expected.
Number five, Chris Cody.
Cuban bread.
Wait, five? What's a shelf life on your Cuban bread? How long?
2 days.
2 days? 2 days.
You are playing hard as a rock after one.
No, you like it hard? You like it super hard?
I like the first day. I'm just saying.
It's a weapon after 2 days.
Depends on the list.
It's his list.
I've envisioned a future in which I'm WWF hardcore champion and I hit somebody with a day-old piece of Cuban bread and Jim Ross is just screaming in the background, God, why? God damn his soul! Hey, you son of a... How dare you? Tell me why!
At Le Batard Show, is Cuban bread starched, weaponized, dry
you
cleaning?
You sick bastard! How could you damn him to hell? A two-day-old piece of Cuban, damn you!
Gets so hard. The first day, you could dip it. It is Cuban bread. Hell yeah. It's Cuban bread dipped in café con leche, correct? Number four.
Butter. A croissant.
It's God damn it.
Number three.
Cornbread.
Cornbread Maxwell. How about that?
Stugatz, he had such a great insult. Him and Draymond are going back and forth. And he just said to Draymond, ask your daddy who I was. They're arguing about something. And Cedric Maxwell, I think, Stan, I can say this. Cedric Maxwell has kind of the credentials that Draymond has, right? I can make Cedric Maxwell about the career parallel, even though Draymond's better at defense.
Yeah, I was going to say offensively, you could make the parallel. In fact, you'd probably make the case that Cornbread was a little better offensively, but defensively, they're not really close.
Number two, Chris Cody.
Prime Italian's garlic bread on Christmas.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
They got a bread maker. Wow, that's all he does. How is something better than that? Well, I do have something better than that. Tell me it's yours. Number one.
A good, from a southern restaurant, a biscuit.
Wow. My top one didn't even make your
top
five.
A warm brisket.
Okay. Stan, are you ready to do yours? Does anyone else here, would anyone else object if I tried to insert my Hawaiian, my delicious Hawaiian roll in the middle of the five breads?
The Hawaiian
I put it right at the top.
You're
good. At the top.
You're good. Number right two, right top. Behind money
that was
for
OLI.
Me.
At the and top. Christmas. OLI, get out of here, OLI. You're OLI. I should make you stand outside that second story window right now, outside looking in that window for omitting the Hawaiian bread.
I also omitted challah.
What about ciabatta?
Number five, Stan Van Gundy, the number five best bread in the world.
I'm gonna go right off his list and go cornbread.
My man.
Number four.
Man, now it's now it starts to get tough. See, he had a specific garlic bread. I would have garlic bread in there, but
okay.
I don't know if that's I mean, you can put that on virtually any kind of bread. So
okay, so my list rearranged.
What is this? Number four is garlic bread, or is it not garlic bread? Is
I know. I'll do it. Yeah.
What kind? That's totally indifferent, and this is not the passion required for number four. Yeah, I'll do it. Fart it out of the side of your neck is not the bread passion I need from you.
Well, that's all I've got for you. And then I'm going to two others right from his list. Number three.
Oh, Jesus. It's his own.
No, I'm saying, but number three, a good warm biscuit is fantastic, so I'll take that. Number two is the Cuban bread. We've got a new place right here in Lake Mary, Latin Sisters Cafe.
No, Cuban food.
With a great Cuban sandwich, which is hard to find in Lake Mary, Florida, believe it or not. And they've done a great job. But then my favorite of all time, if I'm having a sandwich, I want it on rye. I want a good rye bread. Not a marble rye. Not a marble rye. I'm not into that.
Where is the Hawaiian bread?
No. I can't even believe that got on the list. You asked if we had objections. I definitely do.
How do you feel about a good pumpernickel?
No, not a pumpernickel fan.
What?
You are officially, and I didn't know how to say this gently, an asshole. A true and stubborn and recalcitrant asshole that you would say that Hawaiian bread does not, this wonderful roll of soft Hawaiian bread, I refuse you, texturally, you will produce nothing better in the bread kingdom.
I stand with Dan. I mean, it's the only bread I will eat without any cold cuts on it. I will just eat that bread. I'll eat those rolls. They're sweet. They're delicious. Oh, I love them. They're number two, Dan. Number two on my list.
Not to be outdone, I'm not going types of bread, but I'm going bread dishes at chain restaurants. That's in my top five. Irrefutable top five.
Oh, wow. That's a good list because Red Lobster is going to be on there, isn't it?
Oh, damn it.
Yeah, I mean, well,
Texas Roadhouse. Do this to me. Thing you've been doing. Well, all right, I'm taking Red Lobster biscuits off now.
No, that's no, it. No.
He really,
you can't take them off. Those are good.
Not going to be number one anymore because he wanted to take my shot.
How do you feel, Dan? You feel good now?
Come on. God damn you. Hawaiian damn your soul to hell. Why? God, why?
Hildy, order a bunch of cheddar biscuits.
Please, do it.
Hawaiian roll didn't ruin anybody's list. It made for great content. I didn't realize I was going to immediately nuke his first object.
Damn your soul! Number five. Now, with Red Lobster not on this list. Shame on
you. OLI.
Number five, Macaroni Grill.
Stan, are you going to have a list here? Are you going to put together best breads to be found?
It wouldn't have been in my top five. Mid bread, yes. Known, yes. Not in my top five. If Dan didn't open up his trap, yes. But here we are. Number four, Outback Steakhouse.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay.
Good luck.
Number three.
Wait, before you go, don't
you do this again. Damn him.
I'm not going to ruin it again. Just when they clapped, it made me laugh because yesterday I stopped at Family Feud when a family was clapping, and I can't help this. The music on Family Feud, when somebody wins, is the happiest music in the history of game shows. It makes me so happy to see someone win and dance around. Anyway, number three.
Unlimited Breadsticks, Olive Garden.
Really?
Slightly overrated.
No, I would say overrated. Put it on the poll.
Overrated, yes. Unlimited, also yes.
Put it on the poll. Our Olive Garden breadsticks overrated. Number two.
Crazy Bread from Little Caesars.
That's a good choice. Michael. Nice choice. Yeah. Excellent choice.
Good answer. And the number one would have been number two. We're not for Christmas. And hey, Finny, how you doing? And number one obviously would have been Red Lobster, but Dan had to open up his trap and steal that from us. So the new number one is Cheesecake Factory Bread.
It's good. I like it.
Wow. Texas Roadhouse is in there?
Texas Roadhouse. I'm sorry. You know, you have till the end of the segment to take something back.
Yeah.
I forgot Texas Roadhouse.
Doesn't
For that, I apologize.
Doesn't Cheesecake Factory just kind of give you like a bunch of different kinds of bread?
Yeah.
I don't like that. Hey, restaurant, you come up with one bread that's your bread, give me that bread. Don't give me options.
You failed no prime Italian. Like, you got to have, it's anyone's top five.
This was in my top five chain restaurant.
Panera Bread Bowls for soup.
OLI. Broccoli cheddar.
Stan, do you have a top five list in front of you right now that you will go to that is much different from Mike's list of top five chain restaurant breads?
I do not, but I think Mike made a very important point there. Like, you can take one look at me and understand that I support his idea that unlimited is very important. Unlimited quantity, more important than quality, just by a little bit, but quantity over quality.
Forgive my ignorance here, but isn't in all chain restaurants or wherever it is that bread is given, isn't it always unlimited? Just Olive Garden says so? You could keep asking for bread, could you not?
I don't know. I never have, really.
But you could, couldn't you?
I don't even have to ask at Olive Garden. They just keep bringing it. They don't ask. They know that basket's supposed to be full all the time.
It's supposed to be governed by shame.
Right. But I think Dan is right. It's a scam. They're running a scam. You just ask for more bread. They'll give you more bread. They'll give you unlimited bread anywhere you go. You're right, Dan.
Yeah. Somebody on this show is going to accuse someone else of running a scam?
Well, it's not the show.
Well, it's me.
It's not the entire show. Like, don't stain us recklessly with the entire show of scam when what we have is our heart is made of scam, but the entirety of the exoskeleton is not scam. It's just
I was supporting you. I mean, thanks for the support back.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the lead in sports drink plus eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Don Levitard.
Fans cheer that type of stuff. Tom Brady went down with an Achilles the only time he got hurt in his entire career, and I was fist pumping in my living room at home because the Jets finally had a chance to win a division. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not going to apologize for that.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to apologize for that is one of the most amazing sentences you've ever uttered.
Stugatz.
From the maker of Trust Me, Don't Trust Me comes, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to apologize. You are amazing.
Thank you. I know.
You are a flabbergasting delight. You happen upon genius comedy by accident.
That's my gift.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Chris Cody, do you have, before we get to further into this deep basketball conversation with Stan Van Gundy, top five sandwiches to throw at Stan Van Gundy now that he's throwing around the Cuban sandwich?
Of course I do. Let me just pull it up here.
I can't believe you now have near the pontoon boat, finally, some people. Because, Stan, people don't understand. There's Dade County, there's Broward County, and then there's the rest of Florida. The rest of Florida is not Dade County or Broward County. The idea that there's a Cuban restaurant somewhere near you pleases me greatly. Number five.
I don't want to. The only thing I got to tell you, Dan, I don't want to burst your bubble. It's the Latin Sisters Cafe. They make a great Cuban sandwich, but they're Puerto Rican.
Okay, very good. So that's as close as we're going to get.
Scam.
Cheaters, cultural appropriation.
Yeah. What about the people in Tampa? They claim to have the best Cuban sandwiches over there. What's up with that?
Damn, they're sold.
Honestly, Puerto Rican. Yeah, he should be speaking in Spanish, that character. The manly man should be speaking in Spanish as he damn souls on the Cuban sandwich. Chris Cody, number five.
Number five, this is kind of consensus amongst the group here, by the way. BLT.
That's not consensus.
What?
So much for consensus.
No. You've never had a bad BLT.
I don't eat tomato slices, so
they always
I don't like tomatoes.
They're refreshing, they're crunchy. They're cold.
Yeah, they're good.
A little mayo on it.
I don't want lettuce or tomato.
That is not consensus when Roy immediately. The first words are that's not
kind
true.
Of the opposite of consensus.
It's not unanimous.
I'll tell you that.
Number four.
The grilled cheese.
That is consistent. As always.
No pushback there?
Number three, it's fine choice.
Number three is the chicken tender sub from Publix.
Ah, delicious.
Pub sub.
On sale?
It's on sale.
Oh, wow. Footlong?
Hitting that on the way.
$5.99?
Just best, the best of the subs. The sub category has been closed, correct?
Number two.
Number two.
There's a three-way tie for number two.
Oh, for the love of God.
All right. PB&J.
This is outside looking in. That means that all that this means is that 5, 4, and 3 were outside looking in. That's all.
You're right, Dan. Yeah, they're 6 and 7.
We haven't even started your list.
It's like Mount Gregmore all of a sudden.
Your list wouldn't mean there's a three-way tie.
That was number 5, right.
Okay. That was not consistent.
What do you mean? All you've given us so far is the things not worthy of the list.
Second number 2.
No, the grilled cheese sandwich is outside looking in is what you're saying. A classic. Outside looking.
You want
in.
My second number 2?
I want number 5. The real number 5.
All right, the first number 2, PB&J. Second number 2, Cuban sandwich. And the third number 2 is Christmas.
Number 1,
the chicken parm sub.
What?
Delightful.
How did that make it on our list?
Cuz it's delightful.
That was literally just your pick. That was not Democratic
Stugatz
at all.
Stugatz will endorse that. That is Stugatz's favorite sandwich.
He can make
sandwich.
His own list. Yeah.
He can
too much
make
gluten
his own,
for you,
own
Jess,
list. Where are you now right now, Stan, on the top 5 sandwiches? You've been hard at work throughout this, and I believe you're going to have counterculture opinions on this. You're unimpressed by Chris's list.
Yeah, I don't have as many agreements as I did on the other one. In fact, I think I've only got one agreement with him. So I would have...
Number 5...
Number 5 would be a Jimmy John's ham and cheese. Love their bread.
Oh, they have love great bread.
Yeah, good answer. Good answer.
Now, number I would agree delivery. On number 4, grilled cheese.
Well, that's not really agreement.
But only the grilled cheese that I make. I make the best grilled cheese.
Oh, everyone says that.
What kind of cheese do you use?
Not a good cook, but I'll make better grilled cheese than anyone.
I need your process. Let's go. Break it down.
No, I'm not giving that away. Not
even
chance.
A cheese? What kind of cheese?
Not a chance.
What's the cheese in the bread? You use butter in the pan, right? You make it a bit of...
Listen, there's a method to this.
It's mayonnaise.
I am not giving this away publicly.
Do you guys do this thing? Are you lay down one piece of cheese on your bread, and it's kind of like, perpendicular with the edges of the bread, and the second piece of cheese, you go diagonal... And you go diagonal so that the point, so it ends up being a star of cheese with two pieces of cheese. I can't be the only one that does this.
Nice.
You only put 2? It's very particular.
Yeah.
As opposed to folding them neatly
on
each other.
Well, as opposed to having them, right.
Pieces of cheese.
Right. Instead of having 2 squares of cheese just
on top of
each other.
How do you do that, Stan? Give us some of the secrets. It's unfair and wrong.
I can't.
Just tell us your cheese blend.
You can't no comment us on the cheese sandwich.
I cannot do it. I can't. I just, it's the only recipe I have that is protected. I can't do it.
Selfish.
Did Chris just use perpendicular correctly?
I blacked out. Did I do it right?
No, it was so weird. Everything that he did there, I don't understand what he was doing. And Stan, what is the correct way to make a cheese sandwich, even your secretive kind?
No, I'm not telling.
No, but just the cheese. How do you stack the cheese?
No, that's all part of it.
Okay.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. God. This is unbelievable.
You don't give away the family secrets, Dan.
I just did.
Right. Number 3. Jeez.
Look, there's only 2 things I make. Well, 3. I make popcorn, I make grilled cheese, and I make French toast. That's it.
You don't make popcorn as well as I do, I assure you. You do not.
Oh, come on.
Number 3. You don't. Number 3.
Number 3 is a Cuban sandwich.
Yeah, I thought that was number 2 before. Number 2.
Well, that was, no, we were talking about bread. There.
Different
just
list.
Bread
yep.
itself.
Yeah.
Oops.
Number 2,
it's a fine.
Pastrami on rye. And number 1, a muffaletta sandwich.
Oh, wow. A muffaletta making an appearance. Is a patty melt a sandwich?
Is a patty a burger?
I stayed away from all the burgers, but I love a good patty melt.
Rye bread is the worst. We can agree, right?
No, whiff the seeds.
No, it's
whiff
the best.
Seeds. He said
it's the
worst. Best. He said it's the good. Best.
It's the worst, and I'm telling him he's wrong.
No. You got to take the seeds out on the rye bread.
Stan says that it's the best of all the breads.
No, the seeds are the point of the rye bread.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Tommy likes pumpernickel, too. I mean, this guy.
Put it on the poll, please. Put all of these on the poll. At Lebatard Show, is a patty melt a sandwich? Yes or no? What was your second choice there, Stan? Your second choice was?
Pastrami on rye.
Is pastrami on rye a top 5 sandwich for you? Put that on the poll because I think he's choosing. Those are unusual choices. And I like a muffaletta, but you don't have the hoagie on there anywhere? Just in general, the sub?
Well, I had a Jimmy. I did a specific one, a Jimmy John's one.
Have you bitten into one of those seeds in the rye bread? Because that is
delicious.
One of the worst experiences I've ever had.
Oh, delicious. I like rye bread.
One of the worst experiences
that
you've
ever had. That can't be one of the worst experiences.
Boy, if that's one of your worst experiences, you've lived a charmed life.
What kind of privilege do you come from?
It's different than yours, Dan. Two Americas.
One of the worst experiences of my life? Stan, the Miami Heat and Boston Celtics series. Kendrick Perkins is saying blow the whole thing up, trade Jimmy Butler. Mike Ryan doesn't sufficiently appreciate how hard it is to get this close to the finals every year.
I don't know. I don't think they need to blow it up, though. You know, it's certainly not a... They have some good young players, but their core guys now are getting older. I don't think we can count on Kyle Lowry, PJ Tucker, Jimmy Butler being a lot better going forward. So they've got to put the right people around them. I think they, like a lot of teams, could use to get a little bit bigger. And I think Jimmy has shown that he can be great, and he can also miss a lot of games. And, you know, the thing is I was really sort of amazed at the impression of Jimmy Butler by the end of the series. Everybody was just talking about the games he played well, but what about games 4 and 5? Those didn't count? Like, he was a huge reason they lost.
What happened? Like, but what happened there? I just assumed injury, and I assumed after that they would just lose.
Well, wait a minute. So in games 4 and 5, injury's the reason he was as bad as he was.
Stan,
but listen, he had a complete recovery,
Stan,
by game 6
to me.
In one day?
Listen
That's
to me.
A joke.
All right, stop
no
yelling
way.
At me. All I'm saying is I expect...
No way.
Okay, fine. I will allow you to elaborate. But I have never thought that the Miami Heat were going to win a basketball game less than game 6 in Boston, because it seemed obvious to me that Jimmy Butler was a torso throwing his body at the neck of Robert Williams and having no chance or lift in his legs of any kind. So I was legitimately stunned by his performance in 6 and 7. Stunned, because I thought he was that hurt.
Well, he was incredible in both of those games, but clearly he wasn't that hurt. That's my only point. I'm not saying he wasn't hurt at all, but I'm saying that can't be the only thing that explained games 4 and 5.
But he went out at game, the second half of game 3, he was out with a knee inflammation. Well, like, he was out.
Yeah, fine. And so where in that playing every other day series did this remarkable recovery come from?
I don't know what kind of voodoo magic you guys put in the knees of people to get them healthy.
I'm just saying, like, he was incredible in games 6 and 7 and deserves all the credit in the world, but we have to put it in perspective. And I would be worried going forward if I'm the Miami Heat with Jimmy Butler's inability to stay healthy. I mean, like, this didn't just come up in the postseason. I mean, it's like every day almost with the Miami Heat all season long, you're checking to see if Jimmy Butler's available to play. That's a problem going forward. It's the same thing with Kyle Lowry now. Like, you know, that would be my biggest concern. Are those guys going to be able to play a full season and be ready to go at the end of the year? Jimmy Butler had great performances at the end of the year. Kyle Lowry was clearly a problem at the end of the year. He was nowhere near where he needed to be physically to play in that series.
Right. Pat Riley made headlines kind of calling out Kyle's conditioning, and he could be the most in shape person and still hurt his hamstring. But when you take it at face value, you see Kyle Lowry isn't quite measuring up to the condition standards, that the fitness levels that the Miami Heat pride themselves on. What'd you make of Pat Riley airing that out in public? It's probably nothing that he hasn't said already directly to Kyle Lowry, but can we read into the injury maybe being a byproduct of his conditioning not quite being there?
Well, I don't know. You know, that's, as you said, Mike, I don't know if we can ever know the causes, the direct causes of an injury. We just know that, you know, conditioning overall is a huge advantage in both staying healthy and playing well. It's not just a matter of him being injured. He didn't have a great year. I mean, Kyle Lowry's a guy I respect as much as probably anybody I've coached against for how hard he plays and his leadership and intelligence and all of that. He didn't have a good year. He just didn't. And there were a lot of times where, quite honestly, I was watching thinking, man, they're better with Gabe Vincent playing.
Watching the game, Stan, and I don't know if this is just how I've been processing basketball and my education of the game, but I'm picking up on the strategic aspects of the game a lot more than I used to. I don't know if it was through a child's eyes where it was kind of like, roll the ball out, this team has its identity, and they kind of stayed married to it. You know exactly what they're going to do on offense and defense. Where in the NBA, in these finals, it seems as though the tactics are switching, the coverages are switching every trip down the court, and it's, and the hunting of the weakest defender. I know that that was pretty commonplace, but it seems as though the math and the tactics have really altered this way of playing at the highest level in the NBA Finals. Do you feel that way?
Well, yeah, but I think it's always been that way. I mean, and it's more so in the playoffs when you have more time to prepare and your players have more time to focus. Like, I think the big one now going into game four, you know, are how are Boston going to handle the pick and rolls with Curry and with the big guy? Like, we know they're going to switch with Tatum and they're going to switch with Brown. But what are they going to do? Are they going to leave Horford back in that drop? Are they going to leave Robert Williams in that drop? Because I think they're playing with fire. And then at the other end, what's Steve Kerr and the Warriors going to do to protect Steph Curry? In the second half last night, every time they got him on a switch, they came back and double-teamed for him. But was that only because he was in foul trouble, or are they going to have to do that more consistently? And the other thing I'm interested in, even though the very few times Golden State has played zone in this series, I think once in game two and a couple times last night, Boston's attacked it well. But I wouldn't be surprised if Steve Kerr went to more zone in game four, because quite honestly, they don't have great matchups. They're so small.
Moving away from basketball, we'll get back to basketball. But Stan, what are your thoughts on everything going on with the Tampa Bay Rays, with Ron DeSantis, with the idea of punishing the Tampa Bay Rays for advocating for gun safety? The Miami Heat at the end of a game or the beginning of a game gave out the number of congressmen and politicians where we could be calling, because we can't live in an America where schools and slaughtering children is okay by us. So you make what? You're very involved in Florida politics. Everything that's happened since the last time we talked to you, it's a lot of ground to cover, but where do you start?
Well, I applaud the teams for using their platform. I loved what the Heat did, quite honestly, in giving out phone numbers, because, you know, ultimately, that's where change is going to take place, is with the people who can change laws and things like that. So I applaud them. You know, I mean, you have to applaud Ron DeSantis for punishing the Rays, because it's appalling that you would come out against gun violence as a team. I mean, most people are for it. And so if you come out against it, clearly Ron DeSantis needs to punish you if you're for gun safety, because, you know, like I looked at that and I said, look, Ron DeSantis is doing one thing. He's only ever cared about one thing, and that's advancing Ron DeSantis. He could care less about anyone in the state of Florida other than getting their vote and their donations. Like, making their lives better or anything else is so far from his consciousness. Punishing a team, all they said is they're for gun safety measures. How can you be against that? You can argue on what they should be, but we just saw a bunch of little kids get killed in a school, and somebody comes out and said, we've got to end this gun violence in our schools, and you're going to punish them for that? I mean, it's gotten crazier and crazier. We've got these things that we should all be appalled about. I mean, we're the only country in the world where this stuff happens, and we should all be embarrassed by that and concerned about that. and looking for solutions. And Ron DeSantis's thought is, how can I use this politically right here to get some votes? That's what I find appalling. And look, I will say that happens on both sides, where we use these incidents simply to promote a political agenda without a true concern of, we have kids getting shot in schools. Like, let's solve this problem.
Let's play for Stan Van Gundy the sound of Jack Del Rio. Jack Del Rio, old school football guy, bringing to the Washington Commanders some old football voice. I did enjoy retelling the story of Jack Del Rio on a picket line 35 years ago. Shotguns were being held on the picket line, and Otis Taylor, a scout for the Kansas City Chiefs, a Kansas City Chiefs Hall of Famer, a guy who had retired 12 years earlier, Jack Del Rio, famous for coaching in the NFL in a leather jacket, decided on that picket line to attack Otis Taylor, thinking he was a scab when he was a retired player, a scout, and a KC Hall of Famer. And then Jack Del Rio decides, hey, yesterday would be a good day to do this. You guys hadn't heard from Jack Del Rio in a while? Well, everyone needs to hear about the Washington Commanders defense in June and what he thinks of the insurrection.
I'm just expressing myself. And I think we all, as Americans, have the right to express ourselves, especially if you're being respectful. I'm being respectful. I just asked a simple question. Really, let's get right down to it. What did I ask? A simple question. Why are we not looking into those things, if we're going to talk about it? Why are we not looking into those things? Because it's kind of hard for me to say. I can realistically look at it. I see the images on TV. People's livelihoods are being destroyed. Businesses are being burned down. No problem. And then we have a dust up at the Capitol. Well, there's nothing burned down. And we're not going to talk about it. We're going to make that a major deal. I just think it's kind of two standards.
What do you think there, Stan?
Well, my reaction was, you know, look, you've got to understand, first of all, why the protests were taking place. So the Black Lives Matter protests came after a string of police killings of black people. But what the protesters had witnessed was a police officer kneeling on the neck of a black man for nearly 9 minutes while three other police officers stood around and watched. That's what ignited those protests. What ignited the protest as the Capitol is your guy, your hero, lost a free and fair election. like to try to equate those two in terms of the moral value of those causes is absurd. I mean, like, Trump lost an election badly, by the way. And the other people are reacting to people getting killed by public servants, not just getting killed. We have a lot of problems with violence in the country, but it's a special problem when people of color are getting killed by the people being paid by the taxpayers to keep them safe. And if Jack Del Rio can't understand that difference, then I don't know what to do about that.
Whittingham, when he calls it a dust-up, he has apologized. Jack Del Rio says it was irresponsible and negligent, and I'm sorry, even though it's what he really felt.
Whoever he was quoting.
He's sorry about the reaction. He's not sorry about the action. He says, I love, respect, support all of my fellow coaches and staff and respect their views and opinions. I don't believe you do. I believe that that is something you have to say because you have black players in your locker room and what you have said is extraordinarily dumb. But Whittingham, when he says dust up, where is dust up on the list? We have a hierarchy of rising tension, Stan. You tell us if you agree with any of this or disagree. From the bottom up, I don't want you to tell me where dust up is. Skip dust up, but give Stan from the bottom up the list, the hierarchy of escalating tension.
Yeah, so we begin with chicanery, then we move to hijinks, then malarkey, then skullduggery, shenanigans, tiff, spat, quarrel, tomfoolery, then skirmish, then fracas, then hullabaloo, then ballyhoo. And then, as we go up, brouhaha, Armageddon, agree to disagree, gloves off, fisticuffs, Kerfuffle, Hubbub, Hurly Burly, Slobberknocker, Donnybrook, Riot, War, Palace of Auburn Hills.
So where is Dust Up? Where do we find Dust Up on the list? The Insurrection was a Dust Up, according to Jack Del Rio. Where do we find Dust Up?
So it's
I would say I would normally put Dust Up between a tiff and a spat, but I think what it actually was Palace of Auburn Hills.
on our totem, it is above Ballyhoo, but below Brouhaha.
Okay, oh, there it is. Okay. Wow. Del Rio has only apologized for Dust Up, for where he put Dust Up.
Just asking a question, Dan.
Well, here's the problem I have, though, with all of this, is people talk about the protests, which, by the way, were overwhelmingly peaceful in the summer of 2020. I mean, over 95% of the protests were peaceful. So that's the first misconception. But people focus on the protests, unfortunately, more than they focus on what is being protested. And like I said, one is the killing of people of color by public safety officers. And the other is you're trying to overthrow the results of an election. I mean, it's not close.
See you later, Stan.
All right, see ya.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.